Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakakta, Jag like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco. Happy Kokomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line and Kugels. More on their great variety of beverages later on in the podcast. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. Want to give everybody a special shout out. If you are watching us live right now on YouTube, it is past midnight. It is officially Friday, April 30th, and the first round of the NFL draft is over, which means it's time to talk about baseball. No one else wants to talk about football. What's going on, Scott?
Man, I was just appreciating that rendition of Kokomo. I know we hear it every Friday, but it's so good. Like, it's the thing is, like, the actual song is not that good, but this version of it, not even having to do with the lyrics, he just elevates the sound so much. Doc Kratzer did the few years back when he wrote that. And it never gets old. It never gets old. I don't know how he did it, but it's a work of genius.
Yeah, I mean, the best jingles, right, for commercials or whatever it might be, certain businesses, they just have this lasting effect. And Kokomo Friday really does capture that. Some people tell us to play it more, which we're never going to do. It's a Friday thing, which I think is what makes it special.
It used to be every episode that we played it.
Oh, but, my gosh. You
know, then we had to go all corporate and... Fantasy Baseball Today with Frank and Scott and Adam, even though he's never on.
That's true, yeah. Right? We do still give him the shout out, even though he's never here. Today on the show, there is no shortage of interesting starting pitchers to talk about. So they're just all going to take up our Oh My Goodness Gracious segment, basically. We have some prospect updates, a Week 6 preview for you, and some April standouts and more. But let's jump right into Thursday's action.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott, pick whichever one of the awesome starting pitchers which we had on Thursday that you want to talk about.
I will pick the one who I think is probably the least rostered. He was making his first major league start, not his major league debut. Actually, was it technically his major league debut? Did he debut in the playoffs last year? I've delayed it long enough. The name I'm going with is Shane McClanahan. Yeah, I guess this technically counts as his major league debut, even though he debuted in the postseason last year, because I learned earlier that's how it worked with Alex Kirilloff. So anyway, Shane McClanahan looked overpowering, I think would be an understatement to describe his first major league start today against the Athletics, of all teams, one of the hottest teams in baseball. Four innings, two earned runs, struck out five, walked none. Okay, that all is fine and good. 15 swinging strikes on 59 pitches, an over 25% swinging strike rate, which you never see. I mean, I guess occasional start you'll see it, but you know that's basically what maybe DeGrom can do and nobody else in the league can even come close to, you know, over the course of several starts. And, you know, we haven't seen several starts from McClanahan, so maybe it would regress. But, I mean, the stuff, just the pure stuff. I saw Jeff Passan saying that if McClanahan keeps this up, he's basically going to be the hardest throwing left-handed starting pitcher ever. He reached 100.5 on his fastball, and he threw 41% sliders. It's not like It's not like he only had the fastball. It was 41% sliders, 41% fastball. I mean, that's, you'd like to see more of a third pitch at some point, but that kind of pitch mix should lead to a lot of whiffs. So it's the Rays who handle their pitching in the most unconventional manner and are not very forthright about their plans and are extra cautious with their pitching assets, how they deploy them. So the usage is going to be a real concern here. I'm not even confident. Are they keeping him in the rotation? Did you see anything about that, Frank? Or they're being secretive about it, right?
So I saw this little tidbit from before the game earlier on Thursday. Manager Kevin Cash said they plan to use McClanahan as a starter as opposed to an opener to join a pitching staff impacted by injury and will give him the opportunity to grow into that role. To me, that kind of sounds like they're going to let him start and remain in the rotation, at least for now. I think as long as he's performing. And based on what we saw on Thursday, I don't think there's any reason to think he won't perform well.
Yeah, I think that's what it sounds like. That last little clause at the end kind of brought it all the way there. Mm-hmm. But still, who knows? I question the usage. Somebody asked me if I'd drop Michael Kopech for McClanahan, and I would not, even though there are usage questions about Kopech too. I just, over the long haul, I trust Tony La Russa to handle him in a more conventional manner, and I just think he's more talented. I mean, McClanahan looks great, but Kopech is Kopech, so not a bad person to have on your bench, though, McClanahan, because it does look like the potential is very, very high.
And what makes the swinging strikes in the start even more impressive, coming into Thursday, the Oakland A's had the sixth best swinging strike rate in baseball. So for him to get 15 on 59 pitches, it just makes it even that much more impressive for Shane McClanahan. Scott, I'll just ask you, him versus a few of the most added starting pitchers in fantasy baseball right now, according to CBS, would you rather have McClanahan or Alex Wood, who looks like he's back?
He does look like he's back, and I can't quit Alex Wood, just like Chris couldn't quit Byron Buxton. I don't think that's going to turn out as well for me as it has for Chris, but that's my guy I can't quit on, and got to go with Wood for those usage concerns. I imagine I'm going to pick the other pitcher in most of these instances because that usage issue is such a big deal for McClanahan, but just really impressed by the talent he showed today.
How about McClanahan versus Kyle Gibson? Gibson now has five straight quality starts, six innings of one-run ball against the Boston Red Sox on Thursday. McClanahan versus Gibson.
Yeah, I think you got to go Gibson unless you're talking like a dynasty scenario, and McClanahan's already probably rostered in a dynasty scenario.
Mm-hmm. Gibson is 59% rostered on CBS, but I think this new cutter that he's throwing has really elevated his game, and he has a deep repertoire. He threw six different pitches, Kyle Gibson did, on Thursday at least seven times in that start against Boston. One of the, I would say, best lineups, at least in the American League, maybe all of baseball. So Kyle Gibson, he's giving you some length as well, going deep into starts, definitely helps you in points leagues. But Shane McClanahan, for sure, if you have a dead roster spot, get him on your team just to see what comes of it. If you have him in a dynasty or keeper league, you should be jumping for joy because he is a very exciting player. Oh my goodness gracious, for me, I'm going to go with, look, there's no shortage of starting pitchers, so I'm sorry to Yusei Kikuchi and Dylan Cease, we're going to get to these guys, but I want to talk about Adbert Alzolay, who actually had his longest start of his career, the first time he has completed six innings, and he did it at the Atlanta Braves, which is no small feat. Six innings of two-run ball with six strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 94 pitches for Alzolay. Threw his slider, wait for it, 54% of the time in this start. That was 44% on the slider usage entering this one. And I started thinking about it, you know, can he have long-term success throwing his slider that much? And I don't know the answer to that. But then I thought, it reminds me a little bit of Dinelson Lamet from last year, who used his slider over 50% of the time. So he's not as electric as Lamet. He doesn't throw as hard. His slider might not even be as good, but can he be Dinelson Lamet light, at least in the short term for this season? I think the answer is yes. I really like Alzolay. We spoke about him a little bit heading into the season, Scott, as a sleeper/breakout-ish type starting pitcher. He's only 21% rostered. How about Alzolay versus Shane McClanahan in a redraft league?
I think I got to go Alzolay, who I'm pretty excited about. And yeah, I was excited about him as far back as the offseason because I think throwing your best pitch is always a good move. So I definitely approve of what he's doing with the slider. The amazing thing for Alzola is that he didn't have the slider 2 years ago. You know, he was a halfway decent prospect before he even developed his best pitch. And it's clearly his best pitch. And it should make him a pretty good bat misser. Really, it comes down again to usage. And I just have a hard time believing McClanahan will at any point this season be used like a conventional starter. I'm not saying he'll never make a six-inning start, but I think there will be a lot of four-inning starts. I think there will be a lot of stretches where he's removed from the rotation. And it's just going to be hard to get real impact out of that, which is disappointing after, you know, all the good things I said about him and how good he looked today. But I just think that's the reality of the situation.
I get where you're saying that, Scott, with the Tampa Bay Rays, but I'm actually a little bit more optimistic. The fact that they let him throw, I thought it was going to be maybe 2 innings, 3 innings max. They let him go 4. They let him throw 59 pitches. And if the plan is to build him up, I would imagine next start, he has the opportunity to throw 60 to 70 pitches. Maybe he gets all the way up to 70. And if they're trying to stretch him out, maybe the next start after that, he throws more than 70 pitches. So I'm actually a little bit more optimistic, but I understand it's hard to trust anything the Tampa Bay Rays do. McClanahan is awesome, but I agree with you. I would take Alzolay over him in a redraft league. Nowhere in, you know, not in dynasty or keeper leagues, anything like that. Let's talk about
it. Not that I think Alzolay is a bad keeper, but yeah, I think McClanahan's upside wins out in those longer term formats.
Let's talk about a few of these other starting pitchers, Scott. Dylan Cease, he just completed a 7-inning complete game shutout because it was the second leg of a doubleheader. So they only
It's not a complete game shutout.
It's kind of, you know, it's a modified complete game shutout. We'll go with.
Did he go the whole game? Where's Chris when you need him? Did he go the whole game? Was that how many innings were scheduled? Yeah.
I think technically he did, right?
Yes, he did.
Dylan Cease finishes with 9 strikeouts to 0 walks. 0 walks, the key, obviously. And they've just been a huge issue for Cease. I think it was 6 walks per 9 entering this start for him. 16 swinging strikes on 91 pitches, 8 on the slider in particular. But it comes with the caveat, not that I want to take anything away from him, he was going up against the Detroit Tigers. So, all right, let's keep that in mind. Does this give you any more confidence in buying back in on Dylan Cease? His roster rate is 53% on CBS.
Well, it's bad news for Michael Kopech because this seemed like his easiest in. And Cease has bought himself more chances, probably, with a start this good. The number that stood out to me, though, remember what we talked about for Chris Paddock? The spin rate on Dylan Cease's four-seamer was up 139 RPM from his season average in this start. And everything was suddenly more effective, including the fastball. And that was actually something I read this spring. Why it kind of started to get a little hyped for Cease toward the end of spring training is because, just as they said they were doing with Carlos Rodon, their new pitching coach, on the name now, White Sox pitching coach. Anyway,
I forgot it as well. I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, they were doing similar things with both of them. Incorporating the lower body more, make the delivery more repeatable. And one of the things it was supposed to do is put more spin on the fastball, make the fastball more effective in that way. And we didn't see that play out in Cease's first few starts. So I just figured, okay, well, I guess so much for that. But seeing it happen in this start makes me wonder if it's starting to take effect here. I mean, in terms of, like, just raw stuff, Cease is really good. You know, it just doesn't seem like he knows how to get the most out of it. So he's been pretty useless in fantasy so far. I'm not as interested in picking Cease up as I am like Alzolay or even McClanahan because of all the failure on his resume. But there's reason to think with this start that there's still a chance he makes something of himself and of this season.
Ethan Katz is the pitching coach that you were looking for there, Scott. So I agree with you. I would rank Cease behind McClanahan, Alzolay in terms of waiver wire ads. I would even rank him behind Kyle Gibson. Is that going too far, Scott?
No, I had Gibson ahead of McClanahan, remember.
Okay, and let's just figure out where you say Kikuchi fits into all this, because he was at the Houston Astros on Thursday. 7 shutout with 7 strikeouts, 17 swinging strikes on 95 pitches. Mentioned what Shane McClanahan did against the Oakland A's and how impressive it was. Houston entered this game with the best swinging strike rate in baseball, 8.6%. And yeah, for Kikuchi to go out there and get 17 swinging strikes, it's very impressive. And also, he's gone 6-plus innings in 4 of 5 starts. I thought that was pretty interesting as well. So 48% rostered is Kikuchi. Where does he fit into this whole waiver wire glob of starting pitchers?
I guess I'm going to say number one. I was...
Really? Wow.
Well, there's a lot of reason to think Kikuchi is good. I mean, look at his expected ERA last year. Look at his xFIP last year. 2 starts ago, we were all feeling great about him. He'd begun the year with back-to-back quality starts and 16 strikeouts in 12 innings. And then 2 bad starts where he had a combined 4 strikeouts in 11 and 2/3 innings and was walking a bunch of guys. And the swinging strike rate has not been very good either this year or last. But then he had, you know, 17 against a team that doesn't swing him as much. I don't know. He's getting to be kind of a headache, to be honest. You say Kikuchi, I could just see him being someone who I'm in and out on all season long.
Right.
But right now, I feel like I got to say I'm in, you know?
Yeah. For me, it's the overall numbers coming in were bad for Kikuchi, and then the underlying numbers were not really much better in terms of expected ERA on Statcast and xFIP and skill interactive.
Yeah, I'm talking
ERA
about last year, how good they looked,
yeah,
even though
they were great last year. But yep, so far this year for Kikuchi, they haven't been great. So I do think he's going to be inconsistent. I think he's capable of giving you these starts every now and then. But I would rank him behind, personally, McClanahan, Alzolay, Gibson, probably just ahead of Dylan Cease. But it's just really because of that inconsistency more than anything else. So, yeah, I mean, look, no shortage of starting pitchers from today. And you heard Scott's order. That's my order on him.
I think Chris would agree with me for what it's worth.
Yeah, he probably
Chris
would.
I've been getting a lot of stuff right this year. So
I know he loved Kikuchi. Honorable mention to Waskar. You know, I didn't talk about him on yesterday's podcast, so I completely flubbed that one up. But 5 1/3 shutout with 9 strikeouts against the Cubs on Wednesday night, that was. So he's 70% rostered. You know, he's probably available in some 10-team leagues, 12-teamers, anything deeper than that. I think Enoa's probably already rostered. He's been great. I don't know if there's anything you want to add on him, Scott, since you weren't on yesterday's podcast, but
no, I think he's must roster. I'm skeptical he can keep it up. 2-pitch pitcher, really kind of doing a McClanahan thing where the slider he throws just as much, if not more than his fastball. And I think that's been what's allowed him to succeed in spite of 2 pitches. Also the fact that he can crank it up to 98, but he didn't come with much of a pedigree. Minor league numbers don't look great. I'm skeptical, but it's been too good for too long for you to leave him out there and look like an idiot when it does work out, you know?
Yep. Last name I wanted to mention, he's not available in any leagues, but we just got to talk about it. Carlos Rodon, 6 innings of 1-run ball, 12 strikeouts against the Tigers. They're obviously very prone to swinging and missing. 23 swinging strikes for Rodon. And he has a 0.72 ERA on the season, 0.64 whip. The problem, which we've mentioned before, he hasn't thrown more than 160 innings since 2016. So I just wonder is he going to be on an innings limit at some point? I would have to imagine yes, but Tony La Russa is just letting him go out there and throw as many pitches as he possibly can. So Scott, anything to add on Carlos Rodon, Scott, or would you be looking to sell high on him based on that track record that he has of injury and not being this great, obviously?
Yeah, actually, I think it was a week ago today, I wrote about 12 streaking starting pitchers and whether or not you should sell high on him. I had 6 that I said yes, sell high. 6 I said no. Carlos Rodon was one of the yeses, and it was exactly for that reason. I buy into the improvement. I think I don't want to trade him. I want to enjoy him in my lineup because I think it's going to go well. But this is his first full year back from Tommy John surgery, and teams understandably handle pitchers carefully when they're having when they're taking on that big workload again for the first time. And in Rodon's case, you know, coming off a down year where he hardly had any innings anyway, that I think that would be more so. And the fact that they're letting him throw 110 plus pitches, I could see him running into a wall at some point, and you're not having him available for a while. So again, in Carlos Rodon's case, as much as anyone else, when I say sell high, I'm stressing the high. He should deliver a haul for you for the kind of start he's off to. And if he doesn't, then just enjoy the ride. But it's worth dangling him to see, because he's obviously generated as many headlines as any pitcher in the early going, and probably has a lot of trade helium right now as a result.
I'll give you a few names and you just tell me yes or no. Would you trade Rodon for this player straight up? And I realize starting pitcher for starting pitcher trades are harder to pull off, so I'll give you a few outfielders as well. Work in some hitters here. But first name, would you trade Rodon straight up for Charlie Morton if you could, Scott?
I'd want more.
How about Kenta Maeda?
I'd want more. Like, I feel like if you're going to trade Rodon, go for the kill. And these are not go for the kill type moves to me.
Luis Castillo?
Nope.
Someone emailed in today and said they traded away Carlos Rodon for Lance Lynn and that they felt terrible about it after seeing this start. And I said, and it was a points league. I said, no, you should feel very good about getting Lance Lynn in a points league for Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's a little bit higher end, but if you can pull that off, that's something you should look for.
Yes, I agree.
All right, just quickly
ask. You were just below the line with those three names for me. I just think I have enough, you know, I give it at least a 2/3 chance in both Castillo and Maeda's chance. Both the case of Castillo and Maeda, at least a 2/3 chance that they bounce back and are fine. But there's enough concern there that doesn't seem like a good enough sell high based on what Rodon's doing now.
A few outfielders. Would you trade Rodon for Marcell Ozuna?
I'm reluctant to trade any quality pitcher for a hitter. it would be a needs-based thing, but I'd lean no.
How about Kyle Tucker?
Same answer.
Okay. So I'm not even going to ask you about Austin Meadows because he's ranked even lower than those guys. But look,
in both cases, I think I'm talking about only a categories league too. I don't think I'd consider it in a points league for either one of them.
It's Kentucky Derby week and Sportsline has you covered. Don't lay a wager before visiting sportsline.com for the best racing analysis from legendary handicappers. Hammering Hank Goldberg has the inside scoop from Bob Baffert. Jody Demling has nailed 9 Oaks Derby doubles. Horse racing guru Gene Menez will be on the Early Edge podcast dishing out his picks and getting you up to speed on how to bet the first leg of the Triple Crown. Sportsline has you covered for everything related to Saturday's run for the Roses. Some news and notes from Thursday. Corbin Burnes was placed on the IL for unspecified reasons, which sounds like a COVID situation. If he himself tested positive, he'll likely be out at least 10 days. It could last as long as 2 weeks. I hope he's all right. So it's always weird for me to kind of talk about benefiting from a situation like this, because obviously, you know, my concern is that he's safe first and foremost. But I think this isn't the worst thing for his fantasy value, because I think this means we could have Corbin Burnes at full strength later into the season now if we were worried about an innings situation. So I'll just mention that.
Well, yeah. When I first saw the news, before I saw COVID speculation, I assumed it was a phantom IL stint, actually. I assumed it was a strategic move. So
it might.
Probably not, but
you never know. Yeah, I mean, we've seen a bunch of people go on for these unspecified reasons, and it turns out to be COVID. Matthew Boyd left Thursday start against the White Sox with left knee tendonitis. Max Fried impressed during his live BP session. He could be back early next week. Marco Gonzalez was placed on the IL with a mild forearm strain. Yordan Alvarez is undergoing tests on Thursday. By the time you're listening to this, he underwent those tests and could return to the team for Friday. Nate Pearson was reinstated from the 10-day injured list. An option to the alternate training site. He will travel with the Blue Jays AAA team to Trenton, which I didn't really want to hear because I just traded Julio Urías for Nate Pearson in Scott White's Dynasty League. So I want to see Nate Pearson, but they probably want to build him up and get him back on track before they bring him back to the major league team. Both Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain participated in a simulated game on Thursday. Luis Robert was reinstated from the COVID IL. Javier Baez was back in the lineup Thursday after missing 2 days with a hamstring issue. Mike Fiers will return to the A's rotation for at least one start on Friday. Matt Olson was out of the lineup due to an eye injury. Mitch Haniger was not in the lineup for a second straight day due to either an illness or fatigue. I couldn't find just one answer, so we'll go with both. Luke Voit was taking live at-bats on Thursday. His timeline remains mid-May. Aaron Judge was out for a second straight day with lower body soreness. Chris Devenski was activated off the restricted list for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's jump into the Week 6 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Lining Kugels. And before we get to Scott's two-start pitchers that he likes for next week, just want to let everyone know, how is the schedule shaking out for this upcoming week? 12 teams have 7 games, 16 teams have 6 games, and only 2 teams have 5 games next week. That includes the Chicago White Sox and the Cincinnati Reds. So, Scott, I'll throw it your way. Some two-start pitchers that you are looking at that are rostered in, what are we going with this time? Under 75% of leagues? Does that sound kosher?
I've moved it up to 80.
Okay.
Well, it turns out they're all rostered in less than 75 anyway.
So. All righty.
So a few notes from the top, just about two-star pitchers in general. It's really messy right now. The messiest it's been so far this season in terms of who lines up to pitch when. They're pretty much every week I put together a little table like this. The whole week's worth of pitching matchups for every team. And there are TBAs in there. I'm able to figure out who the TBA is probably going to be, and I fill in the name. There are so many TBAs that I just had to leave TBAs. So, teams are having to go deeper into their pitching reserve this week. And it makes it less predictable. Another thing I wanted to point out is that this week, provided nothing changes, and things often change, is shaping up to be the rare week when Shohei Ohtani lines up for two starts, being part of a six-man rotation. It's not going to happen often, so you might want to take advantage of that. Obviously, he's well-rostered already. Okay, so who might you actually be able to pick up who's in line for two starts? Jake Junis, my boy. I said his roster rate should double after that last start. It has not. It's gone up only 5%. Still available in 65% of leagues. It's gone up 5 percentage points, I should say. Some people get nitpicky about that. Anyway, Kansas City and Cleveland are his matchups. I'm sorry, he's not Kansas City. Cleveland and the White Sox are his matchups. One of those is good, obviously. And he's been good. Kyle Gibson, who had another good start today. He gets the Twins and the Mariners. Domingo Germán, he was supposed to make 2 starts last week. Then they inserted Davey Garcia, and they moved Corey Kluber up a day, so Herman did not make 2 starts. He's in line for 2 starts this week. Matchups aren't as good, Houston and Washington, but he's earned a little more leeway based on the way his last start went. Some really deep guys, as in rostered in less than 50% of leagues, Nick Pivetta, Detroit and Baltimore are his matchups, and he's coming off his best start of the year. Now, I saw somebody make a joke on Twitter. Who was it? It was Jeff Zimmerman. Jeff Zimmerman, I think it was, made the joke that Nick Pivetta is shaping up to be this week's Austin Gomber or Joe Ross, who were, I guess, highly talked about two-star pitchers the last 2 weeks who imploded. And I don't have a lot of confidence in Pivetta, but I have more confidence in him than I did in those two, especially with those matchups. So Pivetta, Jay Happ, I have very little confidence in Jay Happ. This is one of those, I'm forced to give you more names, so this is a name I'm going to give you, kind of picks. And Jay Happ's going against the Rangers and the Tigers, coming off 2 7-inning starts. Maybe he keeps it going. I don't see a lot I like in the underlying stats, but hey, the matchups are good.
All right. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on the few of the names that you mentioned there. Jake Junis, actually, in my home keeper league, my dad actually outbid me for Jake Junis, which is hilarious. So thanks, Dad. $5 bid in a 12-team points league. So where Jake Junis was available. So he won him there. And Nick Pivetta, I will just point out, he has a 5.96 walk per nine right now. So he is walking quite a few people, but I do like those matchups. I mentioned that on yesterday's podcast as well. Scott, a few single start pitchers that you were looking at for next week who have nice matchups.
So incidentally, Yusei Kikuchi's set to go against the Orioles. And I think you need to run him out of there again. Brady Singer, who's been on a good run, he gets the Indians this week. Those are my favorites. If you want me to give you a couple more, one I will give you is Alex Wood. And it's very dangerous because it's at Colorado. I don't know. Like, I see myself doing it and I want to reach out and stop myself recommending a pitcher who is available on waivers in nearly half of all leagues at Colorado. But Colorado hasn't played like Colorado so far. Maybe that'll change with the weather warming up. And he's just, you know, he's flirted with a no-hitter his past two starts. So it wouldn't be me starting Alex Wood, but you want a recommendation, there it is. And one in that same vein, I would say Madison Bumgarner against the Marlins, if you're feeling lucky.
The Marlins are what I consider the one of the best matchups in baseball, maybe the best, without Starling Marte in their lineup. Though, Jesus Aguilar, the guy is red hot right now. Scott, let's, speaking of Aguilar, I don't know if he's one of your sleeper hitters, but he is a hitter. So Give us some of your sleeper hitters heading into next week.
Yeah, that's actually the first name I was going to mention, Aguilar.
Nice.
Marlins didn't play on Thursday, right? So that he's still at 5 home runs in his last 6 games. I imagine that would be reason enough to keep him in your lineup. But if you needed another reason, good matchups against the Diamondbacks and the Brewers.
Three more revenge games against the Brewers, Scott.
Yeah, basically the only good pitcher he's facing during the week is Zach Gallen. So if you were on the fence about Aguilar in a shallower league, that might be enough to put you over. CJ Cron's been hot, and he gets 3 games back at Coors Field this week. I don't know. It'll be a matchup of Cron versus Wood, I guess, and we'll see who wins. Luis Arraez, I've been waiting for this week, waiting for the week when the Twins play. They have nothing but right-handed pitchers on the schedule. And him being a left-handed hitter, the splits are like you'd expect them to be. He bats leadoff typically on the days they're facing right-handers. So it's shaping up to be a good week for Luis Arraez, provided you can live without him hitting home runs. I like J.D. Davis's matchups this week. Austin Riley, as hot as he is, I think the matchups are good enough to stick with him. And I think those are the only ones I'm going to highlight here. There'll be a few more in the column, of course. Oh, I didn't mention this for Arraez. The Twins have the best hitter matchups, too, on top of everything else. So, looking good for him. I don't know, maybe you rolled the dice on Mitch Garver after that 2-homer game, considering the Twins have the best matchups. Depends who you have a catcher instead.
I think Alex Kirilloff is probably rostered in a good amount of leagues by now, but you should have confidence to start him against all righty week as well. So
it actually hasn't changed that much. 65% rostered is Kirilloff.
That number should be higher, at least I think. Scott, you mentioned the Twins are one of the teams with the best hitter matchups. Give us the rest of those teams and then the ones that have the worst hitter matchups as well.
So the Twins have the best, like I said, then the Rangers, Athletics, Mets, and Mariners. The worst hitter matchups are the Reds, who are one of the teams with 5 games, the Royals, the Phillies, the White Sox, and the Cubs.
Alrighty, so there you have it. The Week 6 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Line & Kugels. And by the time you are listening to this on Friday, I'm going to be out on the wiffle ball field with Cy Young finalist Chris Towers. That's right, he's already confirmed he's coming out to play. We got the day planned out. You know we're drinking right after the game ends. That's right, in ice-cold Line & Kugels Summer Shandy. It's this awesome blend of crisp beer with refreshing lemonade that fits perfectly when relaxing after a baseball game. You want to drink it while watching a baseball game. It goes very handy as well there. And the Summer Shandy isn't all they offer. They also have a Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, and it's only 99 calories. And if you're into IPAs, Leinenkugel's offers their Lemon Haze IPA, which is a well-balanced, hazy IPA that blends hops with delicious lemonade. So no matter what type of beverage you're craving, Leinenkugel's has you covered. Just head on over to Leine.com. That's Leinie.com, or follow Leinenkugel's on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all of the delicious beers that they brew. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to hit the email of the day, talk about a few prospects. We'll do that next on Fantasy Baseball Today. Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
The email of the day comes from David, and he says, I was lucky enough to get Wander Franco and Jared Kelenic in my league, but I have no idea what to do with them now. How much longer should I hold on to them? Also, what other interesting prospect do you see coming up soon? So the updates that we do have, Wander Franco is starting in AAA for the Tampa Bay Rays. Someone asked me a timeline on Twitter. Look, it's all speculation. It's all guesswork. I'm thinking mid to late May for Wander Franco. So that's what I'll put out there. I did see this update from Jared Kelenic. It was back on April 23rd. So there hasn't been anything since then. I was searching Twitter furiously earlier in the day. They said Kelenic will, quote, play in the big leagues in the not too distant future, according to general manager Jerry DePoto. But the team's current outfield depth chart doesn't presently offer the 21-year-old an opportunity for promotion. So that's Wander Franco and Jared Kelenic. I did also see on Thursday that the Blue Jays announced Alek Manoah will start in AAA. Austin Martin and Jordan Groshans will start in AA. Speaking of Alek Manoah, there's an article on CBSSports.com right now. Some of Scott's biggest dynasty risers and fallers in fantasy baseball. And the prospect risers, Alek Manoah is one of them. So, Scott, if you'd like to tell the good people why he's rising up, now is the time.
Obviously, there's little to go on for minor leaguers. They're just, you get the occasional observation from the alternate sites. There's not really like any data to cite or anything. So it's mostly they've risen over in dynasty value over the course of this first month based on what happened in spring training. And what happened in spring training for Alek Manoah is he was untouchable. He was untouchable. 15 strikeouts in 7 innings, no walks, 1 hit allowed. I mean, that's amazing. And the thing is, he was doing it mostly against major leaguers. Baseball Reference has an opponent quality stat for spring training. It's a 1 to 10 scale, and you know, a lot of times you'll see players with 7, 8's pretty high. You know, for a prospect who comes in late in games, he might have like a 3 or a 4 for opponent quality. Alek Manoah's opponent quality this spring was 9, so he just looked dominant. And I don't know. I didn't consider him that big of a deal before this spring. So it certainly seems like he's more of an asset than he was then. The other 5 prospects who I had as gaining value in dynasty leagues over this first month, I'm going to try to do this once a month. The others were Bobby Witt, no surprise there. Jaron Duran of the Red Sox, who showed power for the first time this spring, and it looked pretty legit. Always had good batting average ability and speed. I had Jazz Chisholm in there because I needed a 5th. And he still technically qualifies as a prospect, 6 at bat short of losing that status. And I'm trying to remember who the other guy was. It was
Dalton. Did you mention Dalton Jeffries?
It was Dalton Jeffries. Yeah. Yeah, if in a fair world, Dalton Jeffries would already be in the Athletics rotation because he was their best pitcher this spring. And you look at his minor league numbers. That strikeout to walk rate is ridiculous. He walks nobody. At least in the minors, he has walked nobody.
I saw somebody make the look. I normally don't like when people automatically make a comp to one of the best players in baseball, but someone said based on what their minor league stats look like, them being equal, that Dalton Jeffries kind of looks like Shane Bieber based on his minor league track record. No.
You may have heard me say that, Frank.
It might have been
you.
I
said that at some point.
It might have been you. I thought I read it somewhere on Twitter. It might have been your Twitter. I don't know, but I saw it somewhere. And the minor league.
Yeah, maybe not.
The minor league profiles are apparently very similar between Jeffries and Bieber.
Yeah. Look,
he's not going to turn into Bieber. I would.
Odds are against that.
Odds are against that happening.
People take offense to those kind of pie in the sky comps. Which I guess I get, but like I feel like that's understood, right? Not every prospect is going to become Shane Bieber. Almost no prospects will become Shane Bieber. But Shane Bieber showed similar strengths, and look what he ended up being. So,
yes.
You know, most likely outcome for Jeffries, as for any pitching prospect, is maybe they get a rotation spot for a couple years before fizzling out. That's the default expectation. But I think the upside case for Jeffries is higher than his prospect ranking would have you believe.
There's no such thing as a pitching prospect. And the reason why I said it annoyed me, Scott, the always making player comps like the best players in the league, is I was watching the NFL draft and they're, every single player is just compared to, you know, one of the best in the NFL. And it was, oh, Travis Etienne, this guy reminds me of Alvin Kamara. Like, okay, what are the chances of that actually happening? This is a baseball podcast, but that's what got the early rise out of me. So that's why I said that. So you can find the rest of Scott's Dynasty Risers and Fallers, of course, on the website. Where do we want to go from here? Promote one more thing. The NFL draft has arrived, and the Pick Six podcast is your audio outlet for immediate reactions for picks from Trevor Lawrence to Mr. Irrelevant. Want to know how your team fared? Each night of the draft, the Pick Six crew will analyze all selections, dishing out winners and losers and team by team grades. Follow the Pick Six podcast wherever you find this one. That's where I wanted to go. I wanted to talk about a few other former and current hitter prospects that are showing up recently. Scott, you mentioned Austin Riley. He's one of your sleeper hitters for next week. We talked about him a ton on yesterday's podcast, but he went 2-for-3 on Thursday with a walk. He is now batting .301 with an .868 OPS. He's 55% rostered. Nico Horner picked up two more hits himself. He's now 9-for-25 since being recalled by the Cubs, 38% rostered. And don't look now, but Andrew Vaughn went 3-for-3 on Thursday with two doubles and two runs scored. He is now batting, wait for it, .279. Kind of looks respectable. He hasn't hit a home run yet. He's hitting way too many ground balls. But chances are, if you held in deeper leagues, you probably held on to this guy. He's 63% rostered on CBS, so he's still on someone's team. There are signs that he is turning it around. So I thought I would give him a shout out.
Yeah, best game of his career so far, right? First three-hit game, maybe the first game with two extra base hits. And here is La Russa's quote after the game. He's showing his teammates, coaching staff, that he's a contributor. He's really a very heady, stable kind of guy. Early on when he was like 0-for-10, he was just pressing for a hit. Can't force hits. Makes it a very deep lineup, doesn't it? I don't know. Maybe that sounds like he's about ready to play him more. I don't know.
I hope so.
But I think Vaughn will be good someday. And I think it will be sooner than later.
I would agree with that. Let's talk about a few other deep waiver names. Brett Phillips, outfielder for the Tampa Bay Rays. He went 1-for-2 with two steals. If you are in the deepest of leagues and you need some speed, he has started three straight games. Josh Rojas, all of a sudden, I wrote 8-for-22. I think he got another hit after that. So we'll go with 9-for-20, his last 23, Josh Rojas, with two homers, one steal. He was crushing it in the spring, got off to a slow start, but he's available. He's only 12% rostered on CBS. So in deeper leagues, if you need a middle infielder, some pop and some speeds from Josh Rojas. Martin Perez was at the Texas Rangers, 5 2/3, two runs, 7 strikeouts to 0 walks. Eric Lauer, remember the name, versus the Dodgers, 5 shutout with 3 strikeouts. He is only 1% rostered on CBS. And the last name I wanted to mention, Luis Garcia versus the Seattle Mariners, 5 innings of 1-run ball, 6 strikeouts. And Garcia has been good this year. 2.70 ERA, 1.05 whip, 20 strikeouts, and 20 innings pitched. So, Scott, anything you would like to add to these names? Brett Phillips, Josh Rojas, Luis Garcia, Martin Perez, Eric Lauer.
I think Luis Garcia should not be featured this late in the program. I think I could have picked him as, oh my goodness gracious, I think, because he just keeps doing this. He had 14 swinging strikes in this one. Basically, his 3 longest outings of the season, 4 plus innings, 14 swinging strikes in all of them. He just keeps doing this. And you look at his minor league numbers from the last minor league season, 2019, Luis Garcia had a 2.98 ERA, a 1.07 whip, 13.9 K per nine, 168 strikeouts, and 108 and 2/3 innings. Maybe the most impressive thing to me, especially given his level of experience, the fact that he's wasn't like a hype prospect or anything, is just how full his arsenal is. For those 14 swinging strikes, 4 came on the fastball, 4 on the changeup, 3 on the cutter, 3 on the slider. You know, usually there's one pitch that does the heavy lifting with that whiff stat. And I the same was true in his last start, how evenly distributed they are with those pitches. Like, it seems like he has a lot going for him, including Jake Odorizzi being out with a strained forearm. That sounds like a long-term absence. We do hear reports of Framber Valdez possibly returning in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So keep that in mind. But for now, Luis Garcia has a chance to make some hay. And I think he needs to be picked up. I think he does. Behind all those other names we mentioned, McClanahan, Alzolay, even Dylan Cease, I would put Garcia behind. But the rostership is basically non-existent now, and it so needs to go up quite a bit from there.
Luis Garcia rostered in just 9% of CBS leagues. Plus, he has SPARP eligibility. So for those who play in points leagues, that's a nice little cheat code there for you with Luis Garcia. Scott, this weekend, there's something very important that's happening on Saturday. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's gonna be May.
It's gonna be May. It's May 1st.
Ah, yes.
Anytime you have an opportunity to play an NSYNC soundbite, you got to do it, obviously. So I did want to take a look at a few statistical standouts as May approaches. And who had Yermín Mercedes leading baseball with a .423 batting average by the end of April, which, as baseball, right? Which we talked about last night. Nate Lowe and Jesus Aguilar are each tied for the league lead with 22 RBI. So the American League, the National League, there you go. Your two leaders, Nate Lowe and Jesus Aguilar. Eugenio Suarez currently has the lowest batting average among qualified hitters. He is batting .125. Scott, should we bench Eugenio Suarez for now, Scott? He seems like one of these guys where once he gets hot, he can hit 4 home runs in a week, and you obviously don't want to miss that, but he is actively hurting people right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the difference between Roto and points. Roto, I mean, obviously you're not banking losses along the way, and you have a bigger lineup to work with, so there's fewer alternatives to begin with. Yeah, I think if I had a hot hand play I could go with in a head-to-head league with a smaller lineup, particularly since the Reds have the worst matchups this week, I think that makes it an easier call.
There is a 4-way tie for the home run lead at this point. Ronald Acuna, Ryan McMahon, Rhys Hoskins, and Byron Buxton each have 8. Shout out to Ryan McMahon. He's been awesome this year, and he's hitting more fly balls. And if he keeps that up, saw Chris talking to someone on Twitter about this today or yesterday. If he was breaking out, Ryan McMahon, this is what it would look like. He's making more contact. He's hitting more fly balls, and he looks great. So I really like what I've seen from Ryan McMahon. Ramon Laureano and Whit Merrifield each have 8 steals. That leads baseball. Ronald Acuna has 24 runs scored and is tied with whom? Mark Canna. 24 runs scored to this point, leading off for the Oakland A's. They've been one of the best lineups, one of the hottest teams in baseball. He's a high OBP guy. So actually, someone emailed in today, Scott, and they said, do you know what my recipe for success is? Or I forgot how he phrased it, but he said, I draft everyone who Scott White likes the year later. So he's like, I drafted Mark Hanna this year. He's like, I drafted Vladimir Guerrero because he said, I think you liked Vlad 2 years ago when he was a rookie or something. So he's like, yeah, he's like, I just draft guys a couple of like the year or a couple of years later. And after Scott likes him and it works out. So there you go. Kenta Maeda has a 6.56 ERA and a 1.76 whip. Both of those are highest among qualified starting pitchers. Danny Duffy leads qualified starting pitchers with a 0.39 ERA. Move over, Jacob DeGrom. Danny Duffy's coming for you.
I would imagine Carlos Rodon passed him today.
I think Rodon has a 0.72 ERA after today.
He does, yep.
Danny
yep.
Duffy's so, still so at
Duffy's is half that.
0.39 for Danny Duffy. There you go. Yeah. Corbin Burns leads baseball with a 0.55 whip. Jacob DeGrom has 59 strikeouts. And the leader in saves, Mark Melancon, has 8 saves for the San Diego Padres. A few other standouts from Wednesday that we haven't mentioned to this point. It wasn't really a standout, but Jordan Montgomery's just kind of been meh. 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 7 swinging strikes against the Baltimore Orioles. Scott, would you drop Jordan Montgomery for some of the names we spoke about earlier?
I think so, because I think he might just be a Met pitcher. It was last year. He's been that this year. It's not like there's some underlying number that says, well, actually, look what's about to happen. So I'd even drop him for Cease. I might drop him for Garcia. I might not.
Okay.
But so, I think I'd drop him for Cease.
All right. So that means you definitely would drop him for McClanahan, Alzolay, Kikuchi, Kyle Gibson, if they're available. So if you have Jordan Montgomery on your team, that's a move that you can make. Trey Mancini went 3-for-4 with his 5th home run. He has 10 hits over his last 7 games, showing signs of life there. Still had a 57% ground ball rate entering Thursday, which is not great. Matt Chapman went 2-for-4 with his 4th home run, back-to-back multi-hit games. Some signs of life there. Chris Bassitt, we were talking about him before the podcast, Scott. At the Tampa Bay Rays, 6 innings, 2 runs, 9 strikeouts. All of a sudden, he has 3 straight quality starts. 25 strikeouts over 18 innings pitched during that span. Where is this coming from? Or has it just been the matchups? They've been really good matchups.
They have been good matchups. I will point out, though, the progression of the swinging strike total start by start for Bassitt. 6, 8, 8, 16, 14, 15. I mean, it's like a different pitcher there. And I think his 3 best swinging strike starts last year were his last 3 also. I happened to go back and look. Those were also very favorable matchups for Chris Bassitt, his last 3 starts last year. Maybe that explains it. I don't see a clear explanation otherwise, but I am not such a slave to the matchups that I think you don't see somebody turn on a dime like this, not in baseball, based on, okay, I'm facing a good opponent versus a bad opponent. Like there's some crossover effect. Like, you know, maybe on the whole, his matchups against the bad teams will be a little bit better than his matchups against the good teams. But you don't see like a night and day difference like this, not over a stretch of starts especially. So I don't know, but a little more open to the possibility that Chris Bassitt is actually good.
Especially when he's looked as good as he has over the past 3 starts. It's kind of like, I was just imagining a triple beam balance, Scott, where it's some of it is the matchup, some of it is, you know, he's probably, even though we can't see it in the pitch mix or anything, he's probably doing something differently that's working for him. So take both of those things into account, and Chris Bassitt has looked pretty good over his past 3 starts. The call to the pen, some bullpen updates. Speaking of those Oakland A's, Lou Trevino was used in the 9th. He picked up his 4th save of the season. He now has the last 2 saves for Oakland. He is 61% rostered on CBS. For the Mariners, Kendall Graveman was used in the ninth, picked up his third save. Rafael Montero was used in the eighth inning on Wednesday night. He gave up four runs against the Houston Astros. Is Kendall Graveman the guy right now, Scott, for the Mariners? He's 40% rostered.
I thought he had all the momentum over a week ago, right? After Montero blew his third save, and then they still went back to Montero. Okay, I guess they really want Montero in that role. But now Montero's up to four blown saves already. And Montero has twice as many blown saves as Graveman has allowed hits this season. So it's real. It's getting really hard to justify not just turning it over to Graveman. That is not my decision to make. And so I don't, but I have to think, like, all the momentum is there now. I'm just reluctant to drop Montero again in those, like, deep leagues where saves, you know, everybody's throwing a ton of fab dollars at every new saves option that emerged, because somebody did that in the 15 team Tower Wars league and it looked like a mistake just a few days later. Maybe it wasn't actually, but we need to see more.
The man who replaced Rafael Montero for the Texas Rangers as their closer is Ian Kennedy. He picked up his fifth save on Thursday. Cesar Valdez, as soon as we talk him up a couple of days ago, he picks up his second blown save of the season. Gave up two walks and a hit in a one-run game against the Yankees. For the Cardinals, Alex Reyes pitched the ninth and the tenth in a tie game. He did not allow a hit, and he racked up three strikeouts. He picked up the win there. For the White Sox, Liam Hendricks picked up his fifth save. Josh Hader got his sixth save of the season for the Brewers. To stream or not to stream, we'll hit Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Scott, choose three of these for Friday. JT Brubaker versus the Cardinals. John Gant at the Pirates. Robbie Ray versus the Braves. Brady Singer at the Twins. John Gray at the Diamondbacks. Mad Bum versus the Colorado Rockies. And Andrew Heaney at the Mariners.
Okay, I'm going to say Heaney.
It's tough because there's good pitchers with okay pitchers with tough matchups. Oh.
I'm going to say Heaney at Seattle, Brady Singer at Minnesota, and I'm going to say Mad Bum versus Colorado. Really rolling the dice on that one, but that's what happens when you stream pitchers.
Yeah, I think Chris last night took John Gant over Brady Singer solely because of the matchup. So,
yeah, well,
not that John Gant is any good. Streamers for Saturday: Matt Shoemaker versus the Royals, Griffin Canning at Seattle, Anthony DeSclafani at the Padres, Austin Gomber, I had to throw the name in because it's hilarious, at the Diamondbacks, Matt Harvey at the Oakland A's, and Spencer Turnbull at the Yankees. This is a real who's who of starting pitchers.
Yeah, this is, man, I thought that last group was bad. I don't know that I won't pick Gomber, to be honest. Like, I don't think he's good, but oof. I think DeSclafani at San Diego. Like, I don't know. Seems kind of suicidal, but you're making me pick, Frank. DeSclafani at San Diego.
I think Canning at the Mariners.
I've just lost a lot of faith in Canning, but okay, fine. Yeah.
It's a bad group, man. Basically, don't stream pitchers on Saturday if you can avoid it.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
If you're making
me pick a third, I'm going to pick Gomber just for the lulz.
Do not start Austin Gomber, even though Scott's just don't. Please don't do it. Sunday streamers: Trevor Williams at the Reds, Garrett Richards at the Rangers, Brad Keller at the Twins, Adam Wainwright at the Pirates, Jose Urania at the Yankees, and David Peterson at the Phillies.
Wainwright at the Pirates. I feel pretty good about that. Yeah, I don't feel good about any of the others. Garrett Richards at Texas, I think I'd pick here, coming off that 15 whiff, 10 strikeout game against the Mets. He had made some mechanical adjustments prior to that caught my attention. And I actually picked him up in a 12-team league just to stash him for now. That's a good matchup. Garrett Richards at Texas. And my third choice would be probably Trevor Williams at Cincinnati. I don't know. That's
question mark.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
I'm Ron Burgundy. Wrap up with some emails here. This one's from Brett in Jersey. Dear Devontae, 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 and Devontae. It's relevant with the NFL draft. Devontae Smith drafted to the Philadelphia Eagles. 10 teams.
Those are four different spellings, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's, if you are a fantasy football writer or an NFL writer, that is one of the trickier ones that you need to be on your toes for. 10-team, 5-player, keeper, weekly, points league. Mouthful. Pitchers are really valuable. I have Corbin Burns, Glasnow, Erod, Gore. All right, blah, blah, blah. You have a lot. Guy Wants, Carlos Carrasco, and Mitch Haniger for Kyle Tucker. Would you give up your Carrasco and Haniger for Kyle Tucker in a 5-player keeper points league?
In a points league, if I'm being honest, I don't think you're probably going to end up keeping Tucker, especially with all these pitchers you're going to end up having to keep. He has Trevor Rogers in there, Luis Castillo. I think I'd stick with the pitching depth. Maybe I'm a nut. Maybe I'm a pitching nut. But I got to be impressed more than that.
You've heard of the pitching ninja. We have the pitching nut here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
If it was not a points league, I would do it. If it was a categories league for Tucker, Carrasco, and Haniger, okay. But points leagues, like, I just assign so little value to hitters in a points league right now.
Scott, close your eyes.
Okay.
Okay, I got to read the next one, and I don't want you to see the answer because it's right here. From Kyle, hey, Pablo, Pete, and Keisha. You had to play it, Scott. You had to play it.
Is that backyard baseball?
That is backyard baseball. Pablo Sanchez, Pete Wheeler, and Keisha Phillips. Thanks to you guys, I find myself in first place in my 14-team Roto Salary Cap League, led by podcast favorites Byron Buxton, Sandy Alcantara, Corey Seager, and others. I am top three in every category except steals. All right, Scott, start thinking of some buy low steals candidates while I read the rest of this question. Who are some good buy low steals players in Roto that won't torpedo all my other statistical categories and could realistically carry me rest of year? Actually, one that comes to mind is Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Nick Senzel, who I spoke about on yesterday's podcast. I think he's a great buy low right now.
My mind went to Jazz Chisholm because he's hurt. It might not be possible.
How about a buy high? Colton Wong. Because I think you could get him for cheaper than what people value him as right now. And I move them ahead of Keston Hira, Scott. I'm all in. I love what I've seen from Colton Wong.
Wow. I move Keston Hira way down, but
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going that far with with Wong yet.
I like him.
I'm
looking, let's see. Know. I'm in outfield.
I mean, I'm just thinking of the most obvious answers, maybe, but is now a good time to buy an Adalberto Mondesi? Because we haven't really heard any clear timetable for him, or his return is getting closer and he will make a huge, huge impact in steals when he does return, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably answer number one. How about Francisco Lindor? Not that he's going to carry you, but can he steal 12 to 15 rest of season? Probably. Yeah. You can. There's never going to be a better time to try and acquire him. So we'll throw Francisco Lindor in that mix. I'll answer a few more here. This one's from a different Kyle. Hey guys, I'm in a 12-team head-to-head categories with OBP instead of average. 5-keeper league. Should I be patient with Jonathan India or drop him for either Colton Wong or Nick Senzel? Both are on waivers. I would drop him for either.
Yeah.
Who do I want more in a 12-team? With OBP, I'll go with Colton Wong. He's a good OBP guy.
Wasn't Senzel too? I think I'd go Wong also. Yeah, I need to see more from Senzel, and not totally trusting in the playing time with Tyler Naquin hanging around.
From our buddy Shine Dog, 10-team head-to-head points league with deep rosters. I gave 3 years of it's also a keeper league. I gave 3 years Wander Franco, 1 year Matthew Boyd. I received 1 year of Trent Grisham.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I mean, it's a 10-team league. Trying to consolidate your talent. You give up best prospect in baseball for the next 3 years. I mean, you're probably close to winning and you're desperate for an outfielder. Probably could have got someone better than Trent Grisham in a points league.
I would think so.
Yeah. I don't hate it, but I don't think I would have done it. So I'll give it a C minus.
Using Wander Franco for a Trent Grisham rental, especially in a shallow league, I think seems like a bad move.
Using Franco, you probably...
No, I shouldn't say especially in a shallow league. It'd be even worse in a deep league, I guess. But I don't think it's good either way.
Yeah, I agree. This last one's from Dwayne. In a 10-team category league, I give up Julio Urias and Nelson Cruz. In return, I get Lucas Giolito, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Matt Chapman. Grade the trade.
Yeah, you get the best player in Giolito. I will give it a B.
A B?
B plus. B plus.
B plus for Dwayne. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.